Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Jean-Pierre Isbouts is the author of a number of best-selling books for National Geographic, including The Biblical World, an illustrated atlas, In the Footsteps of Jesus, and Who's Who in the Bible. Now today, we're going to talk with him about The Story of Christianity, a chronicle of Christian civilization from ancient Rome to today. Professor Isbouts, welcome to LifeQuest. Professor, was this an enjoyable project for you? I know you've had many.
Well, it certainly was, yes, an enjoyable project. It was also a very challenging project, basically because, you know, trying to encompass 2,000 years of the Christian experience in a book, even a beautiful illustrated book by National Geographic, was still a challenge. But I teach at a university in Santa Barbara, Fielding Graduate University, and I teach doctoral students, adult doctoral students. And six of those were volunteering to work on this book with me for credit, and that's what we did. So I did have some help, thank God.
Why do you think this type of book is important at this time?
I think it's important because Christianity is once again going through a transformation. And I think the thrust of the book is that Christianity has been incredibly persistent. I mean, it's an incredible idea that a religion that emerged really in antiquity in the Roman world is still growing today and is still so widely followed around the globe. But Christianity is facing challenges, and really the thrust of the book is that Christianity transformed itself time and again in response to a major transformative event in history, and those are the Crusades, the Great Reformation, and the Enlightenment. And I think we're now facing a fourth major challenge, and that is the challenge of secularization. Mm-hmm. And so what's interesting is that whereas Europe, which really incubated Christianity for so many centuries, is becoming far more secular, the growth centers have now moved to not only the Americas, but also Africa and Asia. And that is an incredible thing to see, that Christianity just continues to grow and prosper, even though it is facing these challenges.
Have you come to any conclusions as to why there's this kind of explosion of Christianity in places like Africa and Asia, and there seems to be, as you point out, a secularization in the Western world?
I think Africa specifically is a very interesting case in point, because I think Africa is sort of the new world, similar to the way that America was the new world in the century. That here is a territory with tremendous tribal traditions that is now coming to terms with the modern world, and in doing so, it's reaching out for solutions. And Christianity, quite clearly, is one of the major solutions that we see here. I mean, the Anglican Church is today the third largest church in the world with 80 million members, and many of them are actually based in Africa. And the same is true for the evangelical growth that we see in Asia and in Latin America. So I think it's a response to the challenges of the modern world and the secularization. And particularly in Europe, I think the memory of two major world wars and, of course, the Cold War that followed has unfortunately turned many people away from the church and from Christ. But that doesn't need to be a perennial state. I mean, I think that Pope Francis, for example, has definitely kindled a lot more excitement in the Catholic Church that we've seen in a very long time. And again, evangelicalism is slowly growing in Europe as well. So maybe it's a temporary setback, but hopefully we'll see new growth there as well in the future.
And it's interesting, you mentioned Anglican. I lived in the UK for a while, and to see that it's growing elsewhere other than its origins in Britain.
Yes, that is definitely a very strange thing. And, you know, I think that in our modern civilization, the first world, we're grappling with many social changes, issues of marriage equality, mm-hmm. and issues of the role of women in celebration. Those issues are less of a concern in places like Africa, where they're struggling with simply the daily challenges of survival.
Right. Well, I wanted to tell you and also our listeners how much I am enjoying the basic fundamentals of what was happening in the world of first century Christians. And you mentioned right in the introduction that, you know, the infrastructure, economics, and other things that were happening in the Roman Empire, that made a big difference in the spread of Christianity.
Yeah, I mean, I even would go as far as to say that had Christianity not happened, had the ministry of Jesus not happened in the first three decades of the first century, let's say in case it happened a century earlier, we probably would not have seen the growth of Christianity as we did see it mm-hmm. under the current conditions. And part of that was that the ministry of Jesus coincided with major transformative changes in the Roman Empire. First of all, the fact that the imperial system was just growing. And you see a man like Augustus, who had great respect for the Jewish religion. He exempted the Jews from celebrating to the statue of the emperor. Mm-hmm. He allowed governors throughout the Roman Empire to facilitate the collection of tithes for the Jewish temple. So Augustus was a very brilliant, very far-reaching man. Obviously, he saw the nobility of monotheism. At the same time, the early imperial system invested tremendously in roads all over the Roman Empire. I mean, it's estimated that, for example, there were some 250,000 miles created infrastructure throughout the Roman Empire, of which 50,000 miles were paved. All of that facilitated the movement of missionaries like Paul, but also many others that we don't know about, and spreading the word of Christ throughout the Roman Empire. And finally, I think there was a true hankering for a new spirituality. You know, the Roman religion was basically completely out of whack, you know, sacrificing to emperors who became gods upon death. I mean, people were really ready for a new and authentic spirituality.
One of the things that grabbed my attention was that you said that anybody, I mean, merchants, travelers, sailors, they all had a part in the spread of Christianity, not just apostles and evangelists and things like that.
Yes, and there's a very important book written by Bart Ehrman, who I'm very proud to say was on the review board for this book. And Bart wrote a book called Lost Christianity. And in this he argues that, yes, there were apostles, and of course Peter and Paul, but sailors and merchants and traders and soldiers who were stationed in places throughout the Roman Empire who had been converted and carried that enthusiasm mm-hmm. of Christianity, definitely were very instrumental in creating Christianities, as he calls it, as well. And that might explain why, for example, by just the end of the first century, there were nearly 500,000 Christians living in Asia Minor, today's Turkey, alone. That is an astounding accomplishment, looking, of course, and judging by the very primitive conditions that existed in the first century. So I think that accounts for the fact that Christianity did grow very rapidly.
The whole basis of this book, The Story of Christianity, which is a wonderful, colorful, coffee table type of book, but I guess what you're saying is that understanding the political, the economic, the culture, the geographics of the times in which Christianity is emerging is really important. I think, though, that all of us, or many of us here in the West, have been colored by the art, our own Western perspective of things. So I guess it's good for us to go back to say, but what was happening then?
Absolutely. It's important to do that. But, of course, the reason why Christianity was so successful in the Greek and Roman Empire is the same reason why it's still so successful today. And I think what made Christianity unique is that it appealed to everyone. It said, you know, whether you're a slave or a senator, whether you're rich or poor, man or woman, citizen or not, we embrace you. You can join the community of the ecclesia of the church and take Christ in your heart and be redeemed. Now, there was no other religion at the time who had that policy of all are welcome. And I think that is what really resonated with the people of its time, Romans and various other cultures who lived under the Roman Empire, because this was an entirely new proposition that simply had not emerged in ancient times.
And you talk about early Christian diversity, I mean, cultural diversity and adaptation. Is there a message for us today on that?
Absolutely. There are people who sort of look at the fragmentation, if you will, of Christianity today, mm-hmm. and the many different confessions we have, the split between the Orthodox and the Catholic and the Reformation and so forth. I don't necessarily think that it's a bad thing. While God is one, people are many. And if there are ways in which someone in Africa can experience God in Christ through the Anglican Confession, more power to him. If in Germany or in Scandinavia, I just spent some time there during the summer, if the Lutheran or the Calvinist tradition mm-hmm. is what resonates with the national psyche, more power to them. And I think that is something that I would like to foster with this book, a sense that we are all brothers and sisters in the same community. We may express ourselves differently, we may speak a different language, we may have slightly different emphases in our doctrine, in our faith tradition, but ultimately we are all followers of Christ, and ultimately the questions that Jesus raised 2,000 years ago are still relevant today.
It is interesting, in the years I've been associated with a variety of churches, that the things which people tend to argue about in a local congregation are really not scriptural things. They are cultural things. Should we have this type of music? Should we have this type of order of service? And what if the pastor does communion wearing a blue shirt instead of a white shirt? You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I must confess, I mean, and certainly in writing this book, I really made a point to go through all the faith traditions just here in my community in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And I was amazed with the richness. And every tradition, again, has its own particular emphasis, and that is, to me, an incredibly fascinating world to experience as a Christian. And ultimately, the differences that separate us are far less than the things we have in common.
I remember many years ago when I was a young pastor that I was a member of the ministerial council in the local small community, and I ended up being kind of a supply pastor for their congregations. I'm a Seventh-day Adventist, worshiped on Saturday, and so I was free on Sundays. And it was a blessing to me, and I hope to them also, as we got to those fundamentals that you're speaking about of what Christianity is. Tell our audience about the format of the book.
Yes. Yeah, well, you know, it's wonderful to really work with National Geographic. I just have to say that, because when you write a book, and I've published books with other publishers, but when you write for National Geographic, you can become part of a team. And I have a wonderful editor, Barbara Payne. You get an art director, you get graphic artists, you get photo editors. And we become a team, and we really want to make the book an incredible immersive experience. So every page, every layout, literally, is a subject of a meeting. There are PDFs floating around. And I try to have a role in that. I have produced and directed films, so I have a bit of a visual eye. Uh-huh. And together we discuss which image should go where, and are we really illustrating the ideas of the text here effectively? So people, the feedback I get is like, my God, it's a feast for the eyes. And
yes.
But that is a very deliberate exercise that it takes us about a year to lay out a book like this. Uh-huh. And of course, the best part of it is the wonderful maps. Carl Mueller, who is the chief cartographer of National Geographic, is part of the team, and at the end, when the book is more or less done, he then creates these astounding maps. I mean, we have maps about the conquest of the Americas and the exploration around the world and how missionaries follow them in their wake, and all that is beautifully illustrated in these maps, and of course, that's what National Geographic is famous for, so it's really a pleasure to work with these people. I just have to say it.
And if you've just tuned in, folks, this is called The Story of Christianity, a chronicle of Christian civilization from ancient Rome to today. And it's true. I mean, every chapter, every page, besides the maps, you have religious art. And, of course, so much of Western Europe and Western America have to do with art from a religious sense, but archaeology too, things that have been uncovered and discovered and that sort of thing. Do you not think it is true also that it's good for us to kind of figure out what they were thinking and why they were thinking it, because everything is colored by the now for us?
Absolutely. And same for the people made back then. And,
okay.
And my first book, The Biblical World, really started this whole process, because what I presented to National Geographic back in 2006 was a ridiculous proposition. I said, why don't we take the Bible as rich material and then try to place these stories from the Bible in the immediate context in which they emerged, so Mesopotamia, Egypt, Canaan or Israel. But look at the literature, look at the objects, the creative traditions, the geography, the history of people movement and battles and political changes, and see if we can make a link between all that context and the stories themselves. And, you know, National Geographic typically makes a print run of 25, 30,000 books. This thing sold over 250,000 books around the world.
Wow.
It's one of the top-selling books of the National Geographic. And, you know, it's a big hardcover book. So that's what really started this whole line of books that we're doing right now with National Geographic. So I think people are really interested in this type of an approach where we say, let's take the stories of the Old Testament and the New Testament, but let's really relate them to the context of the time in which they emerged, so we can try to understand them better. You know, as I tell my students, the greatest challenge for us to understand the gospel, for example, is to imagine a time where there was no internet, there was no television, there were no newspapers, no magazines, no books, really, where people were largely illiterate, and the only way in which they communicated ideas was through the spoken word. Now, if you imagine yourself in that world, now you're beginning to understand the gospel.
The Story of Christianity by Jean-Pierre Isbouts. We're getting towards, of course, the Christmas season, in which we have a heightened consciousness, I hope, about Christ. Where can people get a copy of this book?
Well, of course, your local bookstore. I'm a big believer in supporting local bookstores because, you know, I don't want them to disappear from this earth. So
Right. Go
to your local bookstore, and they can order it from you. Story of Christianity, just mention the title and National Geographic, and they can order from you. Or nationalgeographic.com directly. Or if you have a membership with the A Word, you can also get it from Amazon.com. But I always like to give a big plug for your local bookstore.
And again, The Story of Christianity, the author is Jean-Pierre Isbouts. Thank you, Professor, so much for being with us today on LifeQuest.
Dwight, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
I'm going to tell you about two new DVDs I have received. One is called When Calls the Heart, Change of Heart. Now, let me tell you what that's about. These are actually based on the book When Calls the Heart by Janet Oakes, and maybe a lot of you have read it. It's a faith-based book, a story about a young woman from a wealthy home in the East who ends up being a teacher in the far West, back in the late 1800s. All of the adventures she has, it's in Canada, I believe, and it really has made, it was not only a good book, it was turned into a television series, but also into a movie series. When Calls the Heart, Change of Heart is the latest in the movie about this young teacher on the frontier, teaching in a mining town. In the West. You'll enjoy it. It's a good movie. And it's put out by, Hallmark Channel has aired it. And it's a Believe Pictures production. Another one is called A Long Way Off. And it's a modern-day story of the prodigal son. And it is produced by Prodigal Films Incorporated. And I enjoyed it. I watched it. as Sean Hannity, who reviewed it, said, we need more great faith and family films, like A Long Way Off. He said that on Fox News. And, you know, it's true. It's something the whole family can sit around and enjoy, and as my family did. Now, here's the good news. I have some of these to give to you. If you want a copy of A Long Way Off or When Calls the Heart, send me an email at lifequest@lifetalk.net. Did you get that? lifequest@lifetalk.net. Now, here's a problem that I've been having when I give away books and stuff like that. Many of you say, yes, I hope I'm one of the first people to, you know, request this. You've got to give me not just your name, but your address. Where are you listening to this program? That way, if you are one of the first three to email me, lifequest@lifetalk.net, I can send you your copy. Another item, I will be interviewing Devon Franklin. Devon Franklin is the vice president of Columbia Pictures. He's directed a number of films, including the remake of The Karate Kid. He is known as a speaker, in fact, as a preacher, as well as, you know, having this administrative and directing position with Columbia Pictures. He also talks about how he is able to keep his faith, his Christian faith, in the movie industry. Now, all of that's coming up on LifeQuest. So I hope you look forward to that interview with Devon Franklin and that you take note of these two DVDs I've been telling you on. Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net. My name is Dwight Lainhoff.